And away we go. We're back here, WWGH Radio, Thursday, March the 12th, 2020, 13 minutes past the hour. And this is going to be a very important hour here on the program because, as I was saying in hour number one this morning, I have never seen anything like what's going on medically right now in my life in the United States, at least in the 20th or 21st century. Now, of course, I speak of the coronavirus. Now, here's what's going on as I have it right now, but remember, these numbers are ever-changing, and we're going to try to deal with this on what we know and what we can tell you at this particular point. Now, in the United States, right now we have over 1,000 people who have been infected. 17 dead in the United States. Now, remember the population of the United States. 17 dead, mostly elderly people at this point. But here is the thing. Half the states now in the United States, are reporting cases of the coronavirus, including Ohio here. Our governor on Tuesday declared a state of emergency. You cannot get into nursing homes right now without being buzzed in and answering a whole lot of questions. You cannot visit prisons. The Final Four has no crowds. The NBA season right now is up in the air as a player has tested positive for coronavirus. Tom Hanks has tested positive for coronavirus along with his wife. We don't know where the end is. The president spoke about this on television. When's the last time that happened? Travel is being delayed to other countries and people are not being allowed to come here. Italy is not letting anybody in or out at this particular point. What is coronavirus? It's a pandemic as we have it right now. It's considered a pandemic. Is it flu? What are the symptoms? What's going to happen? What are we going to do? Well, guess what? There's only one person to go to in that situation. He is a best-selling author. He is a great friend of this program. He is a great friend of mine. You probably remember him best as the medical expert on the Today Show for so many years in Good Morning America. And he's been around and seen a lot of things, and the first question is going to be, have you ever seen anything like this in your medical career, which now stretches over 80 years, or life, I guess we should say. Medical career is a little shorter, but life over 80 years at this point. Schools are canceling. Colleges here in Ohio have canceled. Let's just get into it. Of course, the person I speak of is my dear friend, Dr. Art Uhlein. Dr. Uhlein, holy moly, what's going on?
Oh, good morning, Scott. I wish we knew a precise answer to that question, but the information is starting to come in, and I've been reaching out to friends and to reliable sources of information. And I have good news and I have bad news. And the bad news is that it's already here. I have friends who were privileged to speak with a group of researchers at the University of California in San Francisco, one of the top epidemiology centers in the United States. And the message they gave was that we in the United States are currently where Italy was 1 week ago. And they see nothing that suggests that anything will be any different. Italy, a week, 10 days ago, had around 1,000 cases. somewhere between 1 and 2,000, and they're up in the tens of thousands now. The disease just exploded. Here in the United States, the most reliable data center is the Johns Hopkins Center, and they are reporting around 1,350 diagnosed cases. Those are cases around the United States reported by public health laboratories and agencies to Johns Hopkins, which should be applauded for setting up this center. The federal government should have done it and did not. But 1,500 diagnosed cases means that there are probably, I have to put the word probably in there, probably many, many, many thousands more cases. How many? We don't know, because the testing effort in this country has been a total failure. We lost weeks. We actually lost months on this because, for reasons unknown to us, and I won't speculate, our federal government did not mount the kind of surveillance testing that should have started many, many weeks ago when we knew the disease was exploding in China. But this much we do know. If there are 1,300 diagnosed cases already, there have to be thousands more people walking around the United States right now who are capable of infecting others. That's the bad news. The good news is that this is a viral disease, and viruses can't spread without the help of people. So if you locked yourself up in your room for the next few weeks, and I'm not suggesting that, you can't get the disease unless an infected person walks into the room and exposes you to it. And that's the reason we're hearing so much about self-isolation. We can talk a little bit about what that means. But the fact of the matter is that all of these things we're being advised to do, don't go out unnecessarily, don't expose yourself to large crowds, don't kiss, touch, hug, wash your hands, all of these things are very effective mechanisms of putting a barrier between you and the virus. And if you don't come in contact with the virus, you can't get the disease. So that is good news. And by the way, this self-isolation serves more purposes than just protecting you from the disease. It protects those around you. Because if you get infected, there's going to be a period of time when you don't know whether you're infected or not, and you're going to communicate it to friends and family. At least as important as that is that if we collectively, as a nation, could self-isolate, and I'm not talking about absolute isolation, but I'm speaking about relative isolation. If we could just minimize our contacts with others, that at least get rid of the unnecessary exposures to the virus, we could stop the spread of this in the United States. And I don't think this has been emphasized well enough. Collectively, as a nation, if we all engaged in these activities, we might not halt the spread of the epidemic, but we could dramatically slow it, which would provide significant benefits to the healthcare system, which is trying to get ready for it. And we would be able to, I think, almost stop the spread of this. Now, that's an optimistic projection, because the researchers at UCSF have a different estimate of what's going to happen. And I think they're basing that on reality. They're basing that on not what we could do if we all stayed in our room, but on what people are actually doing. And my friends sent me the following message based on their discussion. The researchers told them, at this point, we are past containment. our containment efforts won't reduce the number who get infected in the U.S. We're just trying to slow the spread. This notion that banning flights from Europe is going to keep it from spreading in the country is sheer nonsense. It's here already. It's everywhere already. And anyone who looks at that Johns Hopkins map, and I would urge folks to go take a look at it. In your search bar, put Johns Hopkins coronavirus map. And it's stunning what you'll realize. It's everywhere. And I don't say that to frighten people, but I say that so that people will be forewarned and become more cautious. 4 or 5 weeks ago, my wife began this process. We began stocking in food because it has, those in the know have known for months that this was coming. Somehow, the word did not get out, and now it's getting out in a panicky way. And what I would like to do is offer some assuring words. If you will just be prudent, if you will avoid unnecessary exposures to people who may be infected, you can dramatically reduce your risk of getting this disease.
Dr. Uhlein, this becomes the big question. It's the big question here in Ohio right now. What you just said, the colleges here have, well, some of the colleges, Ohio State being one of them, a huge college, has said we are not going to have face-to-face classes at least until the beginning of April, maybe longer because of this. But public schools are still in session for the most part. People are still going to work every day. People live paycheck to paycheck. How does that play out in this?
Well, the reality of it is that it is probably what's going to feed this epidemic in the country. It is one of the questions, do you close grammar schools, send the children home? Ironically, the children appear to be the most resistant to the disease. At least if they get it, they are the least likely to get sick. It's old guys like me, 83 years old, who are dying of the disease. So we appear to be far more susceptible and far more susceptible to the serious complications of it. But if you close the grammar schools, then what happens to the health workers who can't go to work because they have to take care of their children? There's no simple answer to this, Scott. I wish I could say it was really simple. The one thing we do need to do is take it seriously, not by panicking, but by doing everything we can prudently. If you don't have to go to work and you can do work from home, then for crying out loud, do it. If you have to go to work, then try to keep your physical distance from people. But just a few feet appears to be significantly protective, because the virus is spread through droplets in the air, droplets that go down on the counters. Wash your hands frequently if you are out there in a situation where you could be exposed. Don't put your hands to your face. I'm telling people things they already know, but most people I know are not taking this seriously, and the reason they're not is because you just can't see the disease in people who are asymptomatic. The researchers at UCSF said that it appears to be, they think, it's not proven yet because we have not done the kind of testing we need to get this information. They think folks are infectious 2 days before they get symptoms until about 14 days after. That's a pretty long period of infection and contagion. But the real problem is it starts before the people know they're sick. They can still communicate it. So we shouldn't panic, but we also shouldn't be too casual about it. How long do these viruses last on the surface? They're guessing. 4 to 20 hours is what I'm hearing. But the virus is very susceptible to antibacterial agents, bleach, hydrogen peroxide, high concentrations of alcohol. So here in our home, we're not scrubbing everything down with alcohol. We're not scrubbing anything down. But we're not going out of the house if it isn't really necessary. My wife and I are going to have a very serious talk when she gets up. It's still 6:30 here in L.A. Because our daughter, also a physician and well in the know, has said, you've got to stop Mom from going to work. My wife works at a museum. She is a docent, a tour guide. She's exposed to large numbers of people, and at the age of 80, this no longer seems wise. We have a home here that we have stocked up with food weeks ago, many weeks ago, because it was obvious to us this was going to happen. And we have a home in Utah, which has been stocked up. So that is the best protection. By the way, if I ran out of some food, I would not be afraid to go to the grocery store, all right? But I would keep my distance from people. I might carry my own bag instead of a cart. I might bring some alcohol swabs with me. I don't want to seem paranoid and crazy. But the point is that the risk is still low, so that if people are prudent, the risk at this point is low of getting infected. Having said that, the researchers in the know are suggesting that within a few weeks, we could be where Italy is today. We could have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of cases. And that, I think, is the best reason for people to prudently prepare themselves for periods of relative isolation. If you're on prescription drugs, get a stock of them in the house. You know, I have to laugh because the stores here in California were drained of water. You don't need water in California unless there's an earthquake. The water's going to keep coming out of the taps. But prescription drugs are important. Non-perishable foods are important. So that if need be, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if it does happen, as it did in Italy, you can, relatively speaking, sit this one out in your home.
Dr. Yuling, I want to start kind of basic here because we all know the word now. I don't think there's anybody in America who does not know what coronavirus, has not heard the word coronavirus. We know it's a virus. But what is it flu? Do you feel like flu? We know older people are more susceptible. What happens here? Why can it be deadly? What does it do?
Well, we know it's related to a group of viruses that range from the cold to the flu, but these viruses change. They mutate over time, and every once in a while, we get one for which we are absolutely unprepared because no one's had it before, so we have no natural immunity, and it is more virulent. It causes more problems. I've been reading some information from doctors in Italy, and basically what they are saying is that the cases that get sick, but number one, they're saying there's a very wide spectrum. Some people who are shown to have been infected had no symptoms at all, young, healthy people. The ones who are coming to the hospital invariably are coming in with what is diagnosed as bilateral, both lungs, interstitial pneumonia, which it means it is not like a bacterial kind of pneumonia where you get one spot in your lung infected, but it appears to inflame the entire lungs, and that interferes with these individuals' ability to absorb oxygen. So it's a fairly typical but very severe viral pneumonia. We do know, by the way, we keep hearing figures quoted for mortality rates, and the figures being quoted are guesses. We hear everything from 0.1%, which means 1 in 1,000 might die of this disease, to 3%, 3 in 100. And what it appears to be is that the risk among young, healthy people is very, very low, probably much lower than 0.1%. And the risk in people who are 80 or people who have existing diseases like diabetes, heart disease, kidney disease, which compromised immune systems, which is not uncommon in older people, we have a much higher risk of severe illness and even death if we get the disease. 3%, 4%, 5%, we don't know, because we have not been doing adequate numbers of tests in this country. So I think it's time to just stop panicking over numbers and making up numbers, and just realize older people are at risk, people who are already ill are at much greater risk. We need to take much greater precautions. It's very interesting. Up in San Francisco, they are starting to take people out of nursing homes and return them to their own homes, because the danger of cross-infection in this group is so much greater. We just don't know what's going to happen yet, and I think it's important not to panic, but for each of us to do what we can to prepare for the possibility that this could affect huge numbers of people. The government isn't going to do it for us. This is something that we need to do collectively on our own. But think of the potential power of 300 million people each doing something to minimize the spread. And now you see something potent.
Well, the scary thing here is, Doctor, and certainly we don't want anybody to die. We don't want that to happen. We don't want people to be sick. But this is running neck and neck with panic. And the problem is, when governors declare state of emergencies, like happened here in Ohio and New York and other states, when the NCAA will not let in spectators, when the NBA is postponing things because of one person contracting this, the panic happens and the stock market goes down, and now there's not going to be as much revenue from the NCAA or the NBA, and this pays people's paychecks. That could be very bad if this goes on for a period of time.
It could be, and I believe it will be. There will be a financial crisis, if not for President Trump, than for the millions of individuals whose paychecks are going to be compromised by this. Let's be honest about it. Yes, it is a catastrophe at the family level, at the individual level. It is a crisis. But it is going to take these kinds of measures to keep the U.S. from experiencing what Italy has already experienced. I read a narrative by an Italian physician, and what he describes in the hospitals is sheer chaos. They are drowning in patients with very severe bilateral pneumonia. They have run out of equipment. The staff there is getting infected. By the way, we should point out that when a governor declares a state of emergency, that actually has more to do with funding than with an actual crisis level of health care at this time. That's what opens up the laws and allows the state to get federal funds and assistance. It allows the governors and the legislatures to do things that I think could have a substantial preventive effect.
It's been fascinating to watch, and I'm going to start with the question that I started with here. You've been around 83 years, a doctor for many, many years. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No. The last time something like this hit this country was and the world was back in 1918. We have seen some outbreaks of atypical, unusual, dangerous viruses, SARS, Ebola virus. Those were well contained with early action, and those viruses probably were less transmissible. Some people are hearing it's about something called the R-naught number, R-zero number. And that's a number that scientists have used to develop sort of what is what I think of in common terms as the contagiousness of a virus. And the contagiousness of any particular virus is related to several factors. Number one, it's related to whether or not that virus is new, or if this is the first time we're seeing it. Because if it's an old virus that been around for years and years and years, we have developed, so many of us have already had the infection. We've developed an immunity to it. We don't get it, and so we can't spread it to someone else. Part of it has to do with the virulence of the virus. How powerful is it? How dangerous? Some of it has to do with the social settings. So the R-naught for a virus in a nursing home where people are crowded together and bedridden and sick, it's going to be much higher than for the R-naught on my block, where we've all kind of hunkered down in our houses and we wave at each other and shout, "Do you need anything?" You know? So all of these different factors are going to influence what happens, and the fact of the matter is, we don't know. We really don't know. And when you don't know what's going to happen, then the prudent thing to do is to act as if it could be the worst you can imagine and keep it from getting there, as opposed to sitting back and saying, "Oh, you know, there are only 15 cases and it's going to go away." Whoops, I promised myself I would not get political. And darn it, I did it. But downplaying the threat when the medical experts say it is real is I think a terrible mistake. So don't panic. But just because you don't see it on your block, don't kid yourself into believing it can't come there.
If I am under 60 years of age, if I am an adult, if I am working, if I am paycheck to paycheck, or maybe a month, I could live a month without going to work. Do I call off work today? Do I make sure I have non-perishable food in the house? Do I send my child to grammar school if they are still open? What do I do?
Well, again, you put a lot of ifs in there. You know, if it were me, I would do all of those things. My wife and I stocked up many weeks ago, long before the general public was storming the stores, because people who had any knowledge at all were doing this many, many weeks ago. You don't need to... You don't need to wait when it was obvious this was going on in China and could not be contained. Now, it's easy for me to say, you know, that's what I would do because I am comfortable financially. I have the physical situation. I can work from my home. But for people who can't do that, they can't afford to do that, they got to go to work, I would say go to work. Try to maintain a physical distance from your customers and your fellow workers. Wash your hands frequently. Wear gloves if need be, latex gloves, and and take them off, and still wash your hands. Don't take any risks that are unnecessary. Do everything you can do to minimize your risk, but let's be honest about this. That's a lot easier for me to say and for you to say than for others. We can work remotely. Hey, here I am sitting comfortably at my desk in Los Angeles talking to an audience in Ohio. What a wonderful world this is.
Is it conceivable, Doctor, because the job is the important one here to a lot of people. Is it conceivable? Is this possibly going to be this bad? Is it showing signs to be this bad that people will be told not to come to work? Is that conceivable? That's never happened to my knowledge.
Oh, easily conceivable. Let me just put it this way. 3 weeks ago in Italy, there were around 1,000 cases. Today in Italy, there are somewhere between 10 and 20,000. It exploded in 2 weeks. So, you know, our politicians are pointing to Italy as a country that didn't know how to handle it, and that is sheer nonsense. We in the United States are the country that did not know how to handle it. Will it explode? I don't know. I hope not. Let me just tell you that in the United States already, actually I'm on the Johns Hopkins website, they're reporting 1,323 confirmed cases in the United States and 38 deaths already. You gave a figure that was quite a bit lower. Could the confirmed cases be 10,000 in 2 weeks? Scott, I believe there are at least 10,000 people infected today, but we don't know about the other 7,500 because our testing efforts have been so inadequate. There could be 20,000, 50,000. We don't know.
What do hospitals do if that happens? It's my go ahead.
It's a great question. I can tell you what they did in Italy. And I can tell you a little bit about what they did in China. In Italy, they started emptying the hospitals 2 or 3 weeks ago. And they started sending home every single patient who could be cared for at home. They stopped all elective surgery weeks ago so that the hospital beds would be available in case the crisis hit. They started mobilizing physicians and creating emergency plans for doing that. What happened was that when the first wave of patients hit, they were able to admit them and they were able to take care of them. They very quickly ran out of beds, respirators, and staff, and they are now drowning in a crisis. Could that happen here? Yes. Are we making the same kinds of preparations in our hospitals? Not that I see. Not that I see. And it'd be interesting. You might want to talk to some of your hospitals around Marion and ask them exactly what are they doing.
What happens, because it's always better to err on the side of the worst thing that could happen, if this happens, if tens of thousands of people, like Italy, get in this situation, and we are not prepared, the people who are going to the hospital who can't get a bed, the respirators that might not be there, what do we do? What happens? What's the long-term game here?
I wish I could answer that question. I don't know the answer to that question. But by the way, one of the questions that your listeners might be asking right now is, if I get sick, what should I do? And the answer is, don't jump in your car and drive to the hospital. Pick up the phone and call your own physician or call the hospital emergency room. All most hospitals are setting up call lines right now to discuss it first. The vast majority of people who get sick today do not have coronavirus. We still have colds. We still have the flu going around. And the last thing in the world you want to do is show up on the doorstep potentially infecting other people. So call ahead. Get some advice and counsel. And if nothing else, if there is suspicion, reasonable enough suspicion when the doctor talks to you to believe you might have something and should be tested, at least when you show up at the office or the emergency room or wherever you are directed, maybe it's a public health clinic, they will be prepared for your arrival, if for no other reason than to protect themselves. So don't panic if you get sick. The odds are overwhelming that it is not coronavirus. But do be prudent, be thoughtful, call ahead, and get instructions, because the instructions are going to vary from community to community.
Even if this turns into what is happening in Italy, we're talking tens of thousands of people. Now, that's a big number compared to what we have now, 1,300, I think what you said there, just over 1,300.
Right.
Right. If it turns into that, with the population of the United States, not to minimize this, but this is still not a huge percentage, and I think plays to what you just said, that probably what you have is not coronavirus. Get checked out. But it's probably not that. We're not talking every other person has it. Am I correct?
At this point, yes. However, the epidemiologists I have heard from are predicting that within the next 12 to 18 months, 40 to 70% of the U.S. population will be infected by coronavirus. That's the bad news. I mean, that's the potentially catastrophic news, because if 40% of people over the age of 50 are infected, we're talking about 50 million infections, all right? 50 million people. Our system can't handle that. Here's the good news. The good news is if that happens, we, as a population, will develop what is known as herd immunity. There will be so many of us that have already had the infection and recovered from it, we can't get it and pass it on. It makes it much harder for the infection to spread itself from person to person. So I don't want to guess what could happen. I think it is important that we recognize there is a potential for this to affect half our population, 150 million people.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Yulin, because you've lived through all these events, and so have I. We saw 9/11. We are a country, the United States of America, that for the most part is surrounded by ocean. We always felt safe because of that, I think, until 9/11. We don't fight wars in this country. That has happened very rarely, the Civil War, the Revolutionary War. Even with 9/11, we didn't fight it in this country. We were attacked. We didn't fight it. We've had SARS, we've had 9/11, we've had casualty, Y2K. We've had casualties in this country. When we're talking casualties of a large degree, when we're talking the seriousness of an event, where does this rank in the history of the United States?
I wish I could answer that question. We're not going to be able to answer that question for 6 months to a year. I can tell you that it has the potential, and I heard this from an epidemiologist, it has the potential of killing 1.5 million Americans, older people mostly, guys like me. It has that potential. And we just need to do everything we can to slow that, to prevent that from happening. And again, the one message I want to make sure your listeners get is that each of us, every single one of us, has the power to slow this down by staying away from people who might be able to infect us, all right? That doesn't mean we have to stay away from everyone all the time. It's not possible for many people. But minimize the foolish risks. And that's why I applaud the NBA for what they did. Was it overreacting? Well, if so, I applaud them for overreacting and taking the prudent course. The NCAA March Madness without fans, I applaud them for taking that step. If it turns out to be an overreaction, it will have been a noble deed, not a foolish one.
Let me ask you this, Doctor. If right now, I think we're moving towards self-containment. As I said, here in Ohio, it's a state of emergency, 4 cases confirmed. You cannot get into a nursing home right now without buzzing the door. You could have walked in on Monday. You cannot visit the prisons right now. Big events are canceled. Colleges are canceling. The public schools haven't yet to a certain degree. But let's say they do. Let's say public schools go that way. Let's say people stay home from work. To contain this, so all this stuff doesn't happen, how long are we going to be staying home? How long does it take to contain something like this?
About a month.
A month?
About a month, yeah. And we can't say that with 100% precision, but it's about a month. Maybe it's a little less. Maybe it's a couple of months. But most of the experts I have heard from suggest it's about a month.
Since, I'm going to say the 20th century is when society really exploded into a formal setting, as far as grocery stores, checkout lines, mass box stores, schools where everybody went, nobody stayed home. These things, more people going to college than ever before. This has never happened in that time. How do people miss 2 months of school? How do people miss 2 months of college? How do people miss 2 months of work? How are we equipped to deal with that, do you think?
Well, the answer is we're not. The federal government should be working on this very issue now. They don't need to delay my taxes. I can pay my taxes. But we need to come up with a plan that protects every working human being, the hourly workers, the salaried workers who cannot go to work. And I think this is being seriously considered right now. It needs to be tailored to protect those at greatest risk of financial injury. I went to a big box store yesterday, by the way. I got in my car and I drove 40 miles to meet a friend who lives 40 miles on the other side of that store, a 20,000 square foot electronics everything store, and there were only 3 customers in the store. My friend, me, and one other. It was the most eerie experience I have had in the last year or two. That is a sign of things to come, and it's going to have very, very serious impact on our economy, and this too shall pass. We will survive it if we take care of ourselves, protect our health. We will get through this. I feel so much for those who will really have trouble weathering the pain. And I think we're going to need, at an individual level, to turn to our neighbors and say, do you need help?
And again, maybe this is the most important part, because I watch the media, and the media is taking a lot of blame in this, and maybe rightly so, for the panic, because they're doing it every 5 minutes. But this is the important part. If the listener right now, and we will replay this show, if the listener is in your position and does not have it right now, what should they do? What is the best way to combat this?
Well, the best way to combat both to combat the disease, the epidemic, and to protect yourselves individually is to minimize your close exposure to other individuals as best you can. If you have to be with other people, try to create a physical space 3 to 5 feet away. Don't kiss, don't touch, don't shake hands, because it's a virus. It cannot spread itself. It can only be spread through physical contact. So contact with another individual or contact with the virus they leave behind on a counter or on an object. I am supposed to be going to the gym today. I have an appointment to meet someone at 11 o'clock. I'm not going. That's the prudent thing to do.
The grocery stores, they will remain open, we hope. Because I think people in 2 months' time are going to have to go to the grocery store. I don't know how that's all going to play out.
They will remain open, and I may go to the grocery store today, but I will not have a cart. I will have 4 cloth bags, which I carry on my arm. I will put the food, I may even wear my little vinyl gloves. I will put the food into my bag. It will get checked out at the counter, which means it's going to get exposed. When I bring it home here, I will set it out in the laundry room and let it sit for a day. The virus won't survive, probably, if it's dry. We think it can last for a few hours. I mean, I feel a little silly doing all that stuff, Scott, because the risk is so low. But I'm going to do it anyway because it's the prudent thing to do. And when people ask me, what did you do? I'm going to say, here's what I did. And I recommend you do the same.
Final question, Dr. Yulin. Is there any chance at all where we sit right now that this could have been an overreaction? Are the percentages on that high that we might have overreacted and this might get a little worse but not turn into what we've discussed today?
Oh, I pray that's the case. I hope that's the case. Is there a possibility? Yes, there's a 5, 10, 20, 30% chance that we are overreacting. There is a 100% knowledge that we have underreacted to this point. Mm. We should have been testing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in January and February, because then we would know exactly who had it and who didn't. We would know where to concentrate our efforts and our resources and our energy. And I think we could have dramatically minimized the risk of this spreading. So I hope and pray I will not feel bad if I have overreacted. Mm. I'll feel great. I'll feel like I contributed to minimizing the spread. Let's all pray for that outcome.
Absolutely. Dr. Yulin, I have a feeling we might be calling on you in the weeks to come, and you're always great. And boy, you really cleared up a lot of stuff for me this morning and a lot of other people. Cannot thank you enough for coming on.
It's always my pleasure to be with you. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. Dr. Art Yulin. There you go. I tell you what, stay tuned. Much more here on this station.
He had me on again.
So after he said you stunk, when you came back the second time, what was the mood there?
Well, he said you stunk. I want to tell you something. You were worse tonight than you were the time before. Now,